good morning, my Advent family. It's good to be here with you guys. I'm trying to get into the 21st century here and be hip and cool like Joey. This is the first time I've used an iPad or not hard, like copy paper, right? Thank you. People don't say I'm hip and cool anymore. To be honest, nobody ever said I was hip and cool. If I had a dollar for every time the word dork was used in reference to me, I'd have a lot of dollars. But we'll get through this together. I know it's a bit of a, I'm putting myself at real risk here trying to preach a sermon from a computer. But we got through the first service, so I think we'll be okay here. I haven't had the opportunity to talk to all of you guys individually, and it's been a few weeks since New Year, so Happy New Year. I hope your 2025 has started out on a really good, solid, positive note. I don't know about y'all, but was 2024 like the shortest year you ever remember having? I don't know, maybe I was just too busy, but it feels like 2020, longest year ever, right? 2024, very short. So I can't believe it's already 2025 and I'm having to get used to writing that on everything. Well, with the promise of a new year comes what? New Year's resolutions, right? Right? Is there anybody else in the room besides myself that has made some resolutions for 2025? Darcy? That's it? Oh, okay. My mom? Okay. Gigi's got... Okay, like four of us, right? So the rest of you guys decided to quit before you ever got started, right? You're kind of like the guy that said he really liked watching the ball drop at Times Square on New Year's Eve because it reminded him, it was a nice reminder what he did all year long. Okay, he got that. Yeah, you'll get it in a minute. Or maybe the guy that said, you know what, for my New Year's resolution, I'm going to resolve to quit some of my bad habits. And then he got to thinking about it, and he said, nobody likes a quitter, right? So all you quitters out there, the four of us that are actually quitters, anybody want to share what your New Year's resolution was with the group? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I am saying accountability is the first step of being successful in a resolution. Okay. Oh, Gigi, how about you? What? That is a great resolution. Being present, not being alone one day a week. I like that. I think I need to incorporate the same thing. Well, I have some New Year's resolutions too myself. I wanted this year to be the year that I took better care of myself. I say it every year. Most of us is like, oh, I'm going to work out. I wanted to start eating a little bit better, you know, taking care of myself that way. Actually consistently work out for once in my life. Actually get a regular amount of sleep, enough sleep, which that's what I borrow from when I'm being busy. But it's not just the physical things that I made a resolution for. I want to nourish my soul. I want this to be a year where I pour into growing spiritually. And I've done okay since the new year. Some of them are kind of on life support, but I've been doing all right. Let me say this. We're not just starting a new sermon series. We're kind of halfway into it. The series is reset, but we're starting a new year, and that I don't think there is a better time for us to do a series where we reset and we start over or we program something new. That's what a resolution is, right? It's when you notice there's something kind of not right or wrong or you could do better in your life, and so you want to hit reset. And I don't think there's a better time that we could do it than right now. And I'm glad that's. That's what we're doing. For some of you guys, it's kind of like playing video games. This looks like a gamer crowd here, right? Some over here, this side's more gamer-esque, I'm sure. But you know, like when you're playing a video, some of you guys have apps. Come on, I know you play Wordle and Scrabble. My dad plays, he loves his Scrabble app. But you get going and you start out and it just doesn't go quite the way you want it to, right? And so you're like, you know what, I'm going to just hit reset and start over because I know I can do better and I know I'll get further and I know I'll get a lot more joy out of the experience if I just do that. And that's what we're talking about in this series. Today I want to dive into the subject of resetting our individual sense and notion of Christian community. Christian fellowship, Christian belonging. You know, you can have the best worship and the best preaching in the world, which we're blessed to have here at Advent, but if you don't get connected, if you don't become a part of something, if you do not feel a part of the family or the group, you are not getting the blessing that God has planned for your life as a believer. And I will tell you this, the chances are that when the rough patches hit in your life, you're not going to do well. If you need a title for today's sermon, I know some people like to have a title so that they can kind of know what the guardrails are or what we're actually getting to. Let's just make it the sound of one hand clapping. Okay, now some of you guys go, what? That doesn't make any sense. Bear with me. Hold on, I'll explain it. I'll get there eventually. But before we get started, I wanted to ask everyone for a show of hands. This is going to be an interactive sermon, so you got to work with me here. I want to make sure you stay awake. Who here considers themselves to be an observant person? Raise your hand. It's not a trick question. Go ahead and raise your hand. Okay. All right. If you came here with somebody that raised their hand, how would you agree with that person's self-assessment of their observation abilities, right? No poking in the side, being like, I observed, you're not very observant. How would you take and agree with that? Maybe to kind of give you a little bit of a demonstration here, how many of you guys have ever been asked this question? Notice anything different? With those three words, I've just put half the men in this room into a mild level of PTSD. It happened to me like a week or so ago. And I have learned something that if you hear those words, you're already too late, okay? But if you're like me, guys, you tend to kind of start at the top and work your way down, right? It's like, oh, did you get a haircut? Did you get your hair colored? And if I'm still wrong, I'm already committed. I just keep digging and work my way down. And I'm like, oh, did you get a new shirt? I don't even remember what I wore yesterday. But I work my way down, and usually I wind up giving up, and I'm already in trouble. And I'm a pretty observant guy. I mean, I can notice subtle psychological nuances in somebody's behavior. I can spot a buck off in the woods alongside the freeway at 80 miles an hour. But when it comes to little things sometimes, whew, they just go right past me. And I see some of you women shaking your head and looking at your man. But in all fairness, about 2 weeks ago, Corey and I were coming back from Jackson, Mississippi. We were in separate cars, and she was about 10 minutes ahead of me. And she called me and she said, hey, I took the Vaden exit. I'm at the gas station here getting gas, and they got a little like country buffet inside the gas station. That was the first mistake, gas station food. But do you want to stop and get something to eat? And I said, oh, you talking about the one right there by the state prison? And she's like, there ain't no prison. I kid you not. 10 minutes later, I pull up into the gas station parking lot. Directly behind the gas station, 20-foot high razor wire fence extending on either side for, you know, hundreds of yards with a prison sitting right in the middle. So you ladies do it too, okay, before you start judging. All right, to start the sermon off, I want to conduct a little experiment, okay? And this is going to be our line of demarcation, this central aisle right here. But all you folks on this side, if you'd stand up if you can, go ahead and stand up. What I want you to do is I want you to look around this space and over at all these people sitting down. And I want you to just observe. I'm not telling you what to observe. I just want you to make a mental note of what sticks out in your head. And not only that, I want you to make a mental note of how it makes you feel. How do you feel? Now, I know you guys are feeling kind of self-conscious because these people are all looking at you. Don't worry, your turn's coming. And then once you've kind of observed and you looked around at the space and made a mental note of how you feel, go ahead and have a seat. And now, you guys, I want you to do the same thing. Stand up, look around this space. If somebody gave you the oogle eye, you can oogle them back and make them feel self-conscious. But what is it that jumps into your observation? What is the feeling that you get? Make a mental note of that, and then hold on to it and have a seat. Now, when you're up on stage like I am now, if you're leading worship or you're doing announcements or leading the prayer, one of the things that I notice most obviously is that you're all sitting in rows, right? You're all facing this direction, and I think that pastors like that, you know, because it keeps things in order and it hopefully keeps you engaged and paying attention to the sermon. And so I want you to think about the way we do things now. But then I want you to think about it in the context of the way it was in the first church. They spent very little time in spaces like this. very little time, sitting in rows, looking at the back of someone's head, listening to the preacher preach a sermon for 30 minutes or an hour. Now, some of you guys, as soon as I said that, you got self-conscious and you started doing this. You're like, oh man, this might look. You're worried about bedhead, aren't you? I know those of you guys that like got up late and didn't have a chance to take a shower. Don't worry about it. We love you. We're all family here. We don't care about what the back of your head looks like. I don't want everybody to have a complex when they leave here after this sermon. But here's the thing, guys. The picture of the early church was way less of rows and much more of circles, all right? Rows are great, but circles are better. And what do I mean? Let's all turn to chapter 2 of Acts. Okay, if you got the Bible app, you can open up. I believe it'll be up on the screen. And I'll give you guys a little context. Jesus has died. He was buried. He was resurrected. He appeared to multitudes. He ascended unto heaven. And now he starts something new through the power of the Holy Spirit. Acts 2 actually signifies a very big change in what God is doing. Before, God worked through the children of Israel, right? But now he begins working through something new, something called the church. Read with me here. Acts 2, verse 42, starting in 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles, teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Now, if you're not familiar with this passage or the 41 verses prior to it, it describes the coming of the Holy Spirit, right? And a sermon that Peter preached, and 3,000 people, it's an amazing sermon, I imagine, and 3,000 people made a profession of faith and got baptized, right? But I want us to look at verse 46 again. 46 said, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. So the early church did meet in rows, okay? Peter preaching, they loved it. There was a place for that. But in 46, we see in the other half of the verse something really, really significant. That the early church broke bread together. They did life together in their homes. They met daily. They did more than just meet for an hour once a week. There's a time for rows, don't get me wrong. But like Hebrews 10:25 says, they do not forsake the assembling together as some are in the manner of doing. We are called to come together congregationally, but in between the rows, we have to live life in circles. Now, you might be asking yourself, what is all this circle nonsense business? Circles come in all shapes and sizes and forms. It might look like a Bible study or a Sunday school class or a book study. It might be a women's group. It might be a ministry or mission team, or even something called a circle, which we've had here at Advent for decades. As long as I've been at Advent, we've had circles. But regardless of what it's called and whatever label it's been given, what I'm really talking about here is small groups, okay? Let's unpack why circles, aka small groups, accomplish at least four things in a Christian's walk. And I would say four things that we all need in our lives, okay? The first thing is the spiritual aspect. Let's look back at verse 42 of that passage. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Now, the word devote here in its original use was not a one-time verb. What it actually meant was to continue steadfastly. And fellowship was not like we think of it today. You know, when we say, oh, let's all meet in the fellowship hall, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? What are we going to eat, right? Is Georgia cooking? You know, we're all wondering what's for dinner, right? And we think of it as a come together for a single moment or a single time, and then we disperse. That's not what we're talking about here when we talk about fellowship. What the word was that was used is actually a Greek word called koinonia, all right? And that term refers to the fellowship and communion between Christians and with Jesus Christ. It also means, it means communion, association, partnership. These aren't one-time words. You know, this is doing life together. This is the warts and all, the good times and bad times, the joy and the sadness. That's what this is. The second aspect is the physical, all right? Verse 44 and 45 says, all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. They took care of each other, right? Now, we're not talking about communism here. Some people would like to take that verse and try to drive some kind of personal agenda. We're not talking about taking the means of production away from the private market and the government taking all. We're talking about doing life with people. And what I mean by that is if I know Russ doesn't have enough food to feed his family and I'm in relationship and family and in communion with him, well, I love him. And if I've got more than enough, I'm going to make sure that his family's taken care of and give him some food. Or if I know that Lydia's power's been turned off, it's going to be 10 degrees tomorrow, something like that, right? Tonight, it's going to get cold. But I have enough to keep my power on and some money left over. I love her. I'm going to go take care of her. I'm going to step in and help bear up whatever burden she's dealing with. If you're sick, I'm going to bring you some chicken noodle soup, you know? If you're grieving or you suffered loss, I'm going to come alongside you and put my arm around you, and I'm going to encourage you. That's what we're talking about here. And we do it because God modeled it for us. He came and he gave everything. And when you get a gift that is so enormous and so large that you don't deserve, doesn't it make you more generous with others? When you have suffered and fallen down and messed up and you get a large amount of grace extended to you, don't you find it easier to extend grace to others? That's what we're talking about. But here's the catch. It's impossible, absolutely impossible, for this to even happen if we are not intimately connected with each other. How else are we going to know what your needs are? How else are we going to know when you're going through a battle? How else are we going to know when we can step in and show you love? Any of you guys ever been in a battle? Physical battle, like actual spiritual battle, emotional battle? Yeah. Ever been ready to throw in the towel? Felt outnumbered? Didn't know how you was going to go on? You ever suffered a loss so great, or maybe you're even in the midst of it right now, that you don't even know how you're going to get out of bed in the morning? Well, have you ever had somebody, when you were in a battle, step into it with you to hold your hand and let you know you're not there alone, to encourage you, to lift you up? Maybe they step in front of it and they defend you when you can't defend yourself. If you've been there and you've had that, I promise you, you were in relationship or communion with that group, that individual already. Circles enable us to do battle together, all right? You know, that doesn't happen in rows, guys. It happens in circles. It happens between Sundays. You know, I thank God for the fact that we can come together corporately like we are now and that we can be in worship. And on Sunday mornings, we all need that. There's a place for that. But life and ministry and purpose, that's what happens in circles and small groups, in the trenches. You know, it's easy to miss each other's needs when all we do is stare at the back of their head 1 hour a week. The next one is emotional aspect. There's an emotional aspect to it too. Do we have any introverts in here? Last thing you want to do is raise your hand, right? Well, you did. Very good. Extroverts are usually like, oh, yeah, wow. You know, I always thought that we always fell on two different sides of it. It was black and white. You're either introverted or extroverted. And then I found out there's like a whole spectrum of that. There's what's called a maximizing introvert. You ever heard of that? That's somebody that's really leans introverted, but that they can go be in a group and be pretty outgoing, but they kind of like their battery gets used up pretty quick, so they got to go be alone and recharge. Yeah. So regardless of where you fall on that spectrum, there were researchers that did a study, and they found that whether a person was an introvert or an extrovert or a maximizing whatever, they are happier with other people than when they are alone. That's in person, by the way. Don't make a mistake of thinking that social media, because you got 3,000 friends on Facebook, that you have community and fellowship with folks. In fact, if you try to substitute real fellowship with something like that, it'd be like eating nothing but McDonald's chicken nuggets for all three meals every day and then taking a vitamin pill thinking somehow it's going to like make up the difference. You might make it for a little while, but I promise you, you're going to get sick and die. Social media can enhance community and fellowship, but it cannot substitute it, okay? Studies also show that happy people are more pleasant, more helpful, more sociable, which in turn creates a thing called an upward spiral of happiness. And what that is as you get happy, you know how it's easier to get happier, right? And the people around you, you kind of grab them and pull them with you, right? When you're around somebody that, obviously, if you just woke up, that doesn't work. But like if you are around somebody that's positive and they're happy, it can be infectious, can it? Now, the opposite of that would be depression, right? Which is really kind of a downward spiral of discouragement. You guys remember back in 2020 when we did the COVID lockdowns and all that, and if you'll remember, they said that depression and anxiety and alcoholism and drug addiction, all of that was at record high levels. And I think that was because people felt isolated and alone. They were depressed. I don't know about you guys, but when we finally got to get back together and see our peeps, I remember one of the things we did, and some of you guys were probably a part of it. You remember Nancy and Ed Garrison? They were moving during COVID, and we weren't going to be able to give a going-away party to them. And so we organized like a parade down their street. How many of you guys actually did that with us? Yeah. It was amazing. It was like water to a dying plant. It was magical for my soul. And then when we got to come back together and actually meet in person, and I got to see you guys, I mean, it reminded me how much I need community. But you cannot substitute it with streaming the service every week from home. It's a good substitute if you find you're out of town or sick, but you cannot live on that. The fourth aspect, the final aspect, is missional. Verse 47 says, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. You see, circles can help us live on mission together. And being on mission is far more than attending a service once a week. In fact, did you notice something about the verse? How often were their numbers being added to? Daily. How would they have known that if they only met once a week, right? They were meeting every day. All right, you know, Jesus said in John 13:5, this is how they'll know that you are my disciples, if you have what? Love for one another. There's a lot of love here at Advent on Sunday mornings. I love that about my church. It's the anchor point of my week. I can't do without it. If I miss a Sunday, my whole week feels off. I don't even know what day it is. But to love one another the way that Jesus commands us to can't just happen one day a week for an hour or two. In fact, in the New Testament, you guys have heard of one another statements. There's 59 one another statements in the New Testament, right? And those are statements that we were instructed to fulfill towards each other within the church. I'm going to read a couple dozen of them. I'm going to do it pretty fast just to give you an idea, okay? But I need a drink of water first. Love one another. Be devoted to one another. Honor one another above yourselves. Live in harmony with one another. Build up one another. Be like-minded towards one another. Accept one another. Admonish one another. Greet one another. Care for one another. Serve one another. Bear one another's burdens. Forgive one another. Be patient with one another. Speak the truth in love to one another. Be kind and compassionate to one another. Speak to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Submit to one another. Consider others better than yourself. Look to the interest of one another. Bear with one another. Teach one another. Comfort one another. Encourage one another. Exhort one another. Stir up one another to love and good works. Show hospitality to one another. Employ the gifts that God has given us for the benefit of one another. Clothe yourself with humility toward one another. Pray for one another. Confess your faults to one another. And the list goes on. Now imagine trying to accomplish all of those things 1 hour a week sitting in rows. This happens in circles. This happens when we do life together. I am absolutely convinced that God designed me for you and you for me and all of us for each other, that we are better together. Theologian Eugene Peterson said this. He said, there can be no maturity in the spiritual life, no obedience in following Jesus, no wholeness in the Christian life apart from an immersion in and embrace of community. I am not myself by myself. Say that with me. I am not myself by myself. When you looked around the room earlier, I'm curious what you noticed and felt. Was it an overwhelming sense of warmth and peace and family? Perhaps you noticed somebody that you've done life with for years? Was it somebody that you helped, or maybe vice versa, they helped you through a difficult time in your life? Maybe it was a new haircut or outfit, somebody you loved. Obviously, the ladies saw that. I mean, okay, maybe some of you guys did too, but it wasn't me. Was it someone that you were like, I got to go catch that person after church because I want to talk to them before they leave? Was it somebody that you didn't recognize? Was it a lot of somebodies that you didn't recognize or know? Maybe you didn't notice anything or feel anything at all. You know, as great as rows are, circles are better. We all need people to walk with us in and through the power of the Holy Spirit. What if, instead of just inviting somebody to church, we invited them to do life with us? We invited them into our small group to do life with us. I believe 1,000% that would not only transformationally change Advent, it would change our community and ultimately change the world that we live in. In Genesis 2:18, God said, "It is not good for man to be alone." You know why he said that? Because he designed us to be in community. Case in point, have you ever witnessed a sunset all by yourself and with someone? Which one is better? Have you ever gone to the movies by yourself or with a group of friends? Which one's better? Have you ever been sick or incapacitated and all alone? I've been there before. Or with somebody there to bring you the remote, right? Or a glass of water. Which one was better? Have you ever been downtown late at night on a street by yourself or with a group of other people? Which one was better? Have you ever mourned or grieved alone or with someone else holding your hand? Which one was better? We are better together, brothers and sisters. Solomon, who was the smartest guy who ever lived, wrote these words in Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. It's one of my favorite passages of Scripture because it speaks to community. It says, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken." Rows are great, but circles are better. We've got to invest in others if we want them to be invested in us. And the first step is finding a small group where we can start to invest and do life with others. That's where the multi-strand cords are braided. That's where friendships are born and fostered. That's where together in the Christian walk begins. Now, here's the cool thing about it. You guys can try out a group. We have a growth track going on, and we finished it up today, and that's one of the things I told the folks. Look, you can try them all out. Go to every Sunday school class. Go to all the small groups. If you get to one, it's like, that's nothing for me. Try another one. We've got a bunch of them here at Advent. If you get through all of them and you still haven't found one where you fit in, maybe God's calling you to start a small group. You know, we were never meant to do this Christian walk alone. And God's got a community of friends specifically waiting for each one of us in here. But we'll never experience them if our Christian walk only entails sitting in rows 1 hour a week. You know, you don't have to just make New Year's resolutions on December 31st at 11:59 a.m. or January 1st, whenever you wake up. You can make a decision to change, to incorporate, to remove things from your life at any point. And it's my hope and prayer that in 2025 that we will all choose to be a part of a small group here at Advent. You know, I promise that if you do, that you will experience all the blessing that God has designed for you within Christian community. Now, if in 2024, or even today, when you came through these doors and sat down, you felt alone or unseen or odd man out or not a part, well, 2025 has the promise of being the year and blessing for you and the antidote to every one of those feelings, but you have to take the first step. This year, I've been tasked with getting everybody into small groups. A lot of you guys are already in small groups, but some of you guys aren't, and you're missing out on the fullness of what God has designed for you in Christian family. And so we've started some new small group initiatives here at the church. We've got Rooted. Some of you guys, raise your hand if you've been through the Rooted group. Okay, yeah, so several of you guys went through it. We just went through, we had four rooted groups this past fall, which was awesome. We had three here at Cordova and one out at Arlington. Some of the groups are still meeting together, but it was cool because, like, even in my group, there were people I didn't know. I'd seen them at church once or twice, but I didn't know who they were. But by the end, I felt like they were family in just 10 weeks. And we're going to offer up rooted groups again in the fall. And it's the desire of leadership here at Advent that we want everybody at Advent to go through Rooted at least once. But you don't have to wait till the fall. We've got stuff going on right now. We've got Sunday school classes. We've got youth group. We've got women's groups. We've got book studies. We have got all kinds of things going on and available for you to plug into right now. There is a chair in every one of those groups with your name on it. But here's the big opportunity, and you've been hearing this for the past couple weeks, and we've only got about 2 weeks to get everybody signed up. We are going to do a church-wide small group study that lasts for 5 weeks. Now, this is the best kind of small group you could ever be a part of. There's no homework. we've got probably 25 groups right now that are meeting at all different. We've got on every day of the week except for Saturday. So you can find one that fits you. We've got ones that are designed just for women. We've got some that are just men. We've got some that are for college age and young adults. We've got some for young families. We've got something for everyone. Some of them have childcare. So you've got plenty of opportunity there. If you don't see one, though, that you think is going to be right for you, or maybe you just would like to start your own, it's very simple, and I'll get you set up, and you can rally people together. You can have it in your home. The beautiful thing about leading a group is you get to pick the day, the time, the location, and how many people you want there. And you can go out, and you can say, you know what, I'd like this person to be a part of my community, and have them invite them to come and be a part of it. Now, we want everybody to register. If you guys remember back when we did Purpose Driven Life, I think it was like 15, 20 years ago. How many years ago was that, Dave? It's been a hot minute, right? But we had like 20, 30 groups, and we had everybody. It paid huge dividends in our lives personally, but in the church as a whole, because it knitted us together. And we're hoping that this will be a byproduct of doing this study together. Now, I need everybody to get signed up. If you have the Church Center app, reach here because I think that's my phone. If you have the Church Center app, all you got to do is open it up, tap on groups, and there's a big old list of groups. You can see when they meet, and it's as simple as tapping on that group and hitting join. That's it. Boom, you're in. You can go to the website. They had the little QR code up there earlier. You can log in that way. If you're a part of a Sunday school class that's taking it, have your Sunday school leader put your name down. I'll get you added into the group. But we want to record who all's in a group, because guess what? It's my job to go after those of you that don't sign up for a group. So please sign up, because you'll make my job harder if you don't. We want everybody to be a part of the group and experience. It's a low commitment, but to experience what Christian community can do and be in your life. So in closing, some of you guys are probably wondering, what did the title of the sermon have to do with anything, right? You're like, it seems totally unrelated. Some of you guys are wondering, what is the sound of one hand clapping, right? So, Jeff, who's back there on the computer, would you go ahead and roll that video?
What is the sound of one hand clapping? According to Master Shifu, all we have to do is find the answer to this age-old riddle, and we will attain ultimate cognitive convergence. Let's try this. Oh, this is harder than I thought. There's just no sound. Oh. This is impossible. Oh, that's it. The sound of one hand clapping. I gotta go tell Master Shifu I've attained ultimate cognitive convergence.
You know, the sound of one hand clapping really doesn't make sense. It's not possible, right? Except in a comedical sense where you're smacking yourself somewhere on your body. And accompanied with that is usually pain and discomfort, right? That's not too dissimilar of what it's like to feel isolated and not a part of a community. And you know, the beautiful thing about it is there is a way for one hand to clap. And it's very easy, it's very meaningful, and it can provide you with so much. Charlie. You know, when you are in community with somebody, It's as simple as stepping in to that person that you love that you're doing life with. And connecting. My hope and prayer is that we will not go through this next year trying to clap with one hand, but that we will join a group where it is easy, simple, and rewarding. Let's pray. Father in heaven, I thank you so much for the fact that you desire to be in community with us, so much so that you came down here, you died to show us how much we meant to you. And Father, I pray that we will make that a priority this year, that if there are folks in this room that have not plugged in somewhere, that have not become a part of a community, Lord, that you would give them the desire to do that. And Lord, I know it can be scary sometimes to step into a new group, but Father, it pays such huge dividends. Lord, I pray that we as a church, as a body, will be knitted together, Father, that we will learn to do life together so that we can truly be the hands and feet of Christ to each other, but then together be the hands and feet to the community that we live in. Lord, may we invite people into our lives so that we can share the gospel message with them for you. Lord, we love you, we thank you, we praise you, and we do it in your Son's name. Amen.